Spawtacular 267, Waypoint Playtime for October 28th, 2011.
Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular episode 267. I am your host, Dust Storm, and this week we have a very special guest with us, Cruel Legacy from Cruel Legacy Productions and Halo Waypoint. Welcome.
Thank you very much, glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. So, as you can tell, we're only two men this week, so it might be a little short, but we'll try to give you guys as much entertainment as we can for a two-man group.
I talk a lot, so we'll be able to fill some time here.
You and Grim, you can just go on for days, it seems.
We're the closest thing I've ever seen to like one of those perpetual motion machines, you know, where we just feed off each other, and yeah, it's bad when you get us both talking at the same time. It just never stops.
Oh, you should have been there at the last decade show.
Oh, I listened to it. I think I would have caused more problems than good. So,
oh, you heard Grim, right? I mean, we managed to go on a whole other topic of Halo movies.
Yeah,
and we were supposed to be focusing on campaign, which is it's kind of related. So,
yeah,
I mean, it wasn't like a detriment that we got on the topic, but we still had like an hour discussion on it, which I was not expecting.
Hey, you know, you gotta love those happy surprises when they happen, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you recently finished up a series called Playtime on Halo Waypoint.
That's right, yeah. The entire second season just aired on Waypoint, yep.
Done. Yeah, it aired earlier this week on Monday, right?
Monday was the final episode of the season, that's right.
All right. And it was pretty good. I think one of the big questions on everyone's mind is, how in the world did you come up with that thing and how did you build it?
the tower?
Yeah,
the
I mean, tower? That is a feat of architecture, man.
It was weird. It came together surprisingly easily. I say easily as in I didn't have too many obstacles to overcome other than just time. It was just incredibly time consuming to build it. It was a really bizarre chain of events that sort of led to that coming up, where the entire second season of Playtime, it was never supposed to happen. When I first came up with Playtime, it was supposed to be four short, stupid, funny little episodes, you know, kind of like a sketch comedy type. Like, I came up with four different situations that I thought were kind of funny, and I just do a mini series. And that was it. And then, you know, I made the entire first season, and it was mostly released. I think, you know, the third episode was already out. And I was walking home from work one day, and over the course of like half an hour, the entire second season just built itself in my head. It just came out of nowhere. The entire story, the premise, that tower was in there with it. Like, I just had this image in my head. Mm-hmm. And when I get something that's so clearly worked out in my brain, it's usually relatively easy for me to actually make it, because I knew what it was going to end up looking like, more or less. I mean, there's obviously, you know, I experiment a bit with different forge pieces, moving pieces around in different ways. And, you know, so there's, you know, a few changes that happen along the way, but I had a pretty clear idea of what I wanted it to do and what I wanted it to look like. And, you know, I studied a fair amount of art history and architecture in school. And so I guess I probably just sapped up a lot of that, you know, and just, I copied a lot of, sort of Art Deco style references. So if you look at something like the Chrysler Building, you'll see some similarities there. So I just sort of said, well, you know, if these alien invaders were really into Art Deco, what would they do? You know?
I mean, still though, the fact that you came up with something like that just is just awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm really. That's probably. I'm fairly proud of, you know, I'm really happy with how season two turned out overall, but that tower is probably the thing that I'm most singularly proud of, that I look at it and go, wow, that came together really well. There's one sort of conceit that I had to make while building it, and I don't know if we want to get into it or not. It involves some spoilers, but it was when my original intention was to build it in a way that it would be collapsible, that it could fall apart for the very ending of Playtime season 2. And if you've seen the show, you can see I do a bit of a workaround to sort of make that happen, but didn't happen quite the way I planned it in my head. But it was one of those simple things where building the entire thing without phasing forge pieces together just wouldn't have been possible to make it look the way it did. So yeah,
I mean, that in my opinion, looks almost like someone that Bungie or 343 made that.
Well, thank you. That's about as good a compliment as I
can. You could almost make a level off of that, it would seem.
That's,
like, you know, if you had the internal bits laid out, you could probably do like a multi-tiered thing.
I've actually received a few messages from a few different people over Xbox Live asking if they could use it to build a map, to build a multiplayer map.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, heck yeah. Like, I would love to see if someone could turn that into an invasion map or something like that. I mean, I think it's a good setting.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
You know, you might need to strip some of the features out of it because it's used up most of the Forge budget, just that tower alone. I think that would be incredible if somebody. I'm not a good map maker when it comes to making usable in-game maps, like the whole spawn setting and all that stuff. I'm no good at that, but I can build this cool looking structure. And if someone else can take that and turn that into a fun level, then hey, just let me know about it, because I'd love to have some fun with that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff we see that from the people that actually have asked to do it.
Well, I mean, that's my first sort of question is, okay, well, they want to do it, but are they actually going to get around to doing it?
Right. And yeah.
So I hope they do. I really do, because I think that would be something really cool to see. Because I think it is a really visually cool environment. So
yeah,
it'd be fun to run around blowing stuff up in it.
So how did you? I know you said you came up this within a span of 30 minutes, but how did you develop the idea of the second season? Did just like random stuff coming together, or did you actually have some kind of foundation that you started on and then built the story around that?
It was a little more like I had a general idea for a basic plot. Like a really, really general idea, like these invaders show up and Warren and Cobra have to fight them off. Like that was, like as basic as it gets, right?
Yeah.
And then I had a whole like just chain of really specific moments that I could just picture crystal clear that I knew I wanted to have these really specific moments. Moments like it could be something like when Cobra first gets encountered by those three elites sort of circling around him. I just get these freeze frames in my head of, oh, that'll be a really cool visual or a cool moment, or the Falcon flying towards the tower was another one that just burned itself into my head. It's very iconic looking. And so I get all these moments, and then I start saying, okay, so how am I going to string this together? How am I going to fit it into a story and make it cohesive? And that was very honestly very new to me, because the first season of Playtime, it didn't have a story, right? It was just these four funny scenarios. Each episode just had its own little scenario. It was total slapstick. It was like watching the Three Stooges or something like that. Like, haha, you just watch this guy get blown up over and over again in silly ways, and that was it. But this one is like, okay, so I gotta make a cohesive story and put it together. And so I basically, the way I sort of approached it, I had all these moments, and then I actually started by writing a script, but I wrote it scene by scene, but not necessarily in order. Like I said, I'd have, okay, I know I want this scene in this place, and I started writing dialogue and just sort of seeing where it led. And once I had all these scenes, I actually ended up doing a little bit of juggling with them. Like, when you watch the entire season two, the scenes aren't all in the same order that I originally had them in the original version of the script. Once you put it all together, you find little problems. Oh, this won't work if this happens already, and I got to move this scene over here, or they have to discover this first before this happens. So right. You move stuff around and shuffle it around, and but that's one of the advantages of making the entire season in one go, right? Is that I'm able to do that and then make it all and put it into a sort of a cohesive chunk rather than making one episode at a time and hoping that I'll be able to resolve it all by the end.
One of the other things with Playtime specifically is that your seasons are 4 episodes compared to a lot of other seasons where you see stuff that's usually at least 8 to 10 episodes.
Yep.
So is there a reason specifically that you do such short seasons, or is it just it seemed like the story that you were told in the second season could have been expanded to like something like 6 episodes, because it seemed like the elites could have been introduced or expounded upon a little bit more, but I'm guessing you have a reason behind why it's short.
Well, it's quite honestly, it's mostly just workload. It's just the fact that because I'm a control freak, and I want to do it all I want to do it all by myself, right? I say that half jokingly. It's true. I am a bit of a control freak when it's something that I'm very deeply invested in. Mm-hmm. But more than that, it's just an issue of for lots of logistical reasons. It's just easier for me to do this by myself than it is to try and coordinate a team of people around it, because I change my mind on stuff constantly. I might one day feel like sitting down and writing music, and another day feel like filming out some scenes or doing some forage work. And when you get multiple people involved, it just turns into a logistical nightmare trying to organize all that stuff, right? I'm not organized enough to structure a team. You know, I like to sit down and work at it however I want. So I'm doing it all myself. It takes 3 months to make 4 episodes so far. Right? It took me almost 3 months to make the first season. It took me 3 solid months to make the second season. And I'm working on the third season now, and I'm very early in it. Like, I'm still in the just barely starting to actually write the script, to actually write out the dialogue. I've got the basic plot and the basic premise set up in my brain, but it takes a lot of time, like a lot of time and work, and because I really like to get it all together and all finished and get all everything organized before I actually put it out there. Mm-hmm. And so I agree. Like, I think I could very easily expand. I could have expanded season 2 into a longer series. I was tempted to, actually. There was a little more to the story that I cut very early, like in the initial planning stage, just because part of it was sort of like, well, this is going to be too long. It's going to take too long for me to make all of this. And the first season was 4 episodes. So, you know, that's a format that in some ways is shorter than maybe it could be, but there are benefits to that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it makes it nice and easy for people to jump in and catch it in little digestible chunks. You know, when you look at other, like, I'm a huge fan of Red versus Blue. And I mean, I think Red versus Blue is absolutely brilliant. And if you make Machinima and you're not influenced by them in some way, then I don't know how that's possible. And having said all that, I haven't watched any Red versus Blue in 3 or 4 years because I missed like a season or two, and there's just so much story and so much plot there that it's a huge time commitment to catch up on all that, right?
And a weekend.
possibly, depending on well, I mean, what else you're
each
doing.
Each season is basically a movie.
Exactly, yeah. And they're on what? See, they're is season 9 released now, or are they still working on that? I lost track.
Episodes are still being released.
Yeah.
The pre-orders are out, but yeah. I think on episode 17 as of this week.
And so I'm not knocking that format. I'm just saying that there's advantages and disadvantages. And I think that for me, I mean, I honestly have no idea how many of these I'm going to make. I kind of like the idea of every time I have an idea I like, I'll make it. And if I have an idea for season four, I'll do that. But because I'm doing it in these little chunks, I'm not digging myself into this hole. And then, you know, if I suddenly run out of steam, or if I just feel like working on something else, I'm not committed, you know, halfway through a 20 episode season or something like that. I can, you know, I'd rather put out short little bursts more frequently, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, put out another 4 episodes and just let them fill that role.
Cool. So in terms of, I guess, the entire playtime thing, it's basically you just started making episodes and you called it playtime in the beginning, or was there any kind of motivation behind that? You just kind of wanted to make your own machinima?
Yeah, it was basically I wanted to try machinima. I'd been doing all sorts of various types of montages and forge work and things like that for a long time, and the idea of making a machinima was sort of like, it's sort of the ultimate combination of all of those different elements that I'd been working on over the past year with Crew Legacy Productions. And I suddenly just one day had this sort of concept in my head of it was originally going to be this little show about making fun of the stereotypical differences between your classic Halo fan and your classic Call of Duty fan. And it was going to be this Halo fan trying to teach a Call of Duty fan how to play Halo. It was going to be all these just real nerd level inside jokes that, you know, the hardcore Halo community would maybe hopefully find funny. And if you've seen the very first episode of Playtime, there's this little bit where Cobra says that he's got his own sniping gear and he shows it to Warren and it's a camping stool.
Yeah.
And that was the first that was the first gag that sort of birthed the entire show for me. It sort of just from there I sort of started building more and more ideas, but I really quickly went away from the Halo versus Call of Duty aspect because it's so inside baseball, it's so niche.
And
I was really, I think again, you know, not to bring up Red versus Blue again, but the chord that they struck is that you can watch that show and enjoy it even if you've never heard of Halo before, you've never touched a video game. It's just a legitimately good show.
Yeah,
and
it's good,
you know,
comedy.
Exactly. And so I wanted to you know, develop something that I could hopefully take in that direction more.
Okay. I mean, Red versus Blue is going to just be one of those that's going to stand out in terms of Halo Machinima everywhere. Because, I mean, they basically started it, I would think. They were the one that basically got Halo Machinima off the ground.
Oh, yeah,
and
for sure.
Probably were one of the reasons why we can thank Bungie for Theater Mode.
They were doing it without a Theater Mode, but that led to lots of other people saying, oh, you know, I want tools to make this easier. And I think that has absolutely played a huge role in Bungie realizing how much of a demand there was for something like this.
Yeah. The only thing that they haven't done yet, which I wish they would do, is allow the weapons down in custom games.
Oh, yeah. Right there, I could have other people help me out with body acting, right?
Oh, yeah.
instead of trying to control 4 characters by myself, but,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, I've looked into doing something like X-Link or Xbox Kinect for possibly doing something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something worth exploring for sure.
So, yeah, but I mean, definitely a big influence, and it's obviously had an influence on your show. But
oh,
then
sure.
Again, your show is kind of short and simple, almost.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, and it's I think the single biggest influence that I've derived from them was not so apparent in the first season, but when I sat down to do the second season, I was really saying to myself, okay, so if I'm going to do more than just a couple funny little episodes, if I'm actually going to develop this into a series, a full blown, you know, mini series, but still a series, mm-hmm. There's got to be good writing. There's got to be a reason for people to watch and listen, and people have to enjoy the characters and enjoy the dialogue, and it can't just be a series of funny explosions. You know, it's gotta right. have more to it than that. Even though the show is still very basic. It's very simple. I'm just absolutely beginning to develop myself as a writer. You know, I'm such a total rookie, and I'll be the first to admit it. But I think there's a marked progression between season one and season two. And I'm hoping, with the way things are going so far, I think in season three, that'll be exponentially higher yet again. I think that's something that I'm going to get better and better at as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have a few questions for Cobra, if he's actually around.
Oh, okay. Well, so
any
so there's
you can go into character on that one.
Well, there's one problem. I can try. first of all, I can't actually do that voice naturally.
Really?
That's a lot of pitch adjustment post processing. I can sort of do it, and basically when I record Cobra, I'm talking like this. But then I do a lot of pitch adjustment in post to make his voice way like higher and squeakier than I can't possibly make those sounds with my voice. So I can try.
Maybe I can do it in post.
Yeah. Seriously, give it a shot. Raise the pitch. Yeah, raise the pitch of my voice 8%. That ought to do it.
All right. I'll see if I can do that. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
So here goes the test of the quote unquote mini Cobra interview. So welcome, Cobra, to Podtacular.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm okay.
Okay. I don't know if you know, but right now we're talking to Crew Legacy, the producer and maker of your show.
Never heard of him.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he stopped by on that little special after season one. I guess you were off playing in the background, so.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. He talked to Warren forever, and they got together along pretty well.
Yeah, I tuned them out pretty quickly.
So, I wanted to ask kind of how you felt when you were going through all the tests that Warren put you through in that first little bit where you got introduced to him.
Well, you know, I mean, I was a little confused at first because I was wondering why I wasn't getting any better, and then I just finally remembered that Warren is a douchebag, and he was just screwing with me the whole time, but I guess I'm really competitive, so I decided that you know I was gonna show him I could still do it anyway, and it just. It didn't really work out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
You did seem to get blown up a lot, though.
I can take it.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're still walking and standing, so I guess you're one tough son of a.
I've got business cards on the way that have that written all over it.
Very nice. Yeah. So what did you think when Warren sent you up to that big man cannon like thing? Because that thing looks ominous.
Well, you know, I'm not gonna lie. It was actually pretty cool. it hurt like hell, but man, that was fun. It was worth it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Do you think you flew pretty far?
I think so.
All right. Do you think that any of the training that Warren put you through adequately prepared you for what you had to do to take out the elite invasion that was coming?
Not at all. No. It was absolutely useless.
So what do you attribute your ability to actually take out those guys?
Pure, natural-born awesomeness.
All right.
No, I'm serious. No, it's a medical thing. You can look it up.
All right, we will definitely look into that for you. So do you consider Warren more of just an acquaintance, a friend, or someone you just have to put up with on a daily basis?
All of the above. we're good buddies, but he knows how to have fun at my expense.
All right. So why did you end up falling asleep?
I was tired. I had a long day. You know, I'm stressed out. I'd already been blown up once. I wet myself. I needed a nap.
Must have been an awfully long nap.
Well, if you call 12 hours a long nap.
I think that's a little more than standard for most people.
Well, I'm obviously not most people.
I guess that is true. Is there any one particular part of the endeavor that you kind of, like, didn't really look forward to or was kind of shaky on whether or not this was actually going to work in terms of a plan?
The singing. The singing was definitely the scariest part.
Okay. Very interesting. Well, thank you, Cobra. We appreciate you dropping by for us.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
All right, so that was our little Cobra interview. Hope you guys enjoyed that. We'll see how well this goes out in post.
Give it a shot.
If this works, you got to promote me somehow. Oh. Nah, that's cool. So one of the interesting things, I guess a lot of the people that have already watched your series know, and through the magic of post, hopefully this sounds, the transitions between the two clips works, but you do your own audio for all the voices. So you did it for Warren, for Cobra, and I'm assuming you did it for the elites, right?
Yes, yes. I think if I remember correctly, there were a total of, I think, 10 different voices in season 2. And I did all of them except for the female character, who that was done by my wife.
All right. What about the high-pitched elite person?
Yeah, that was me.
How in the world did you come up with that one?
That was, I think that was going back to...
I mean, that's almost like a mini relationship between Warren and Cobra, except on the elite side.
Yeah, I was thinking like the exact same thing. You know, wouldn't it be funny to have sort of their mirror image, just a little glimpse of them? And those two characters were, you know, I mentioned earlier that there was some stuff that I cut from season 2, mm-hmm. and pretty much everything that I cut had to do with them. And it's just for the logistical reasons that I mentioned. I didn't want it to go too long, and I was worried about making the invader characters too funny all the time, because I did want them. It's tricky to balance. How do I make them funny yet believably scary? Like, even if they're not scary to the audience, it should at least be believable that they're scary to Cobra. And so, if you only ever saw it, like, if I spent scene after scene with these really, really funny elite characters, it would be tougher to sell it. That's something I'm going to explore a lot more in the third season, though, because I think what I've done is I've established the elite commander as he's the badass, he's the scarier dude who, you know, our main characters should be afraid of, and I think that gives me a little more room to have some fun with some of the peripheral characters, you know, some of his troops who maybe aren't quite as badass as he is.
Right. So is there any kind of hint on what you can give on where Cobra and the Elite Chief are after season 2?
Well, I can
say... Or is that spoiler territory that you can't go into?
It's spoiler territory that I don't mind sharing, just as long as we clearly label it as a spoiler, so people listening know that, you know...
Spoilers for the next minute, folks.
Yeah, there we go. So I'm not going to give away much, but I will say that in season two is going to be about finding Cobra. It's going to be about tracking him down. Sorry. Yeah. No. I'm remaking season 2. I'm pulling a George Lucas already. Yeah.
Oh.
No. Season 3 is going to be about, it's going to be like the search for Cobra. And it's going to be a lot of cutting back and forth between, there's going to be Warren, and he's not going to be alone on his quest to find Cobra. I'll say that. And there will also be a lot of scenes showing Cobra, and without giving too much away, the invader commander has him locked up. And so we're going to get to see, you know, in season two, you get to see these invaders come in and sort of build a frontline fort. That was in season two.
Okay.
In season three, we're going to get to see their home base, like their base of operations. And that's where they've got Cobra. And so there's going to be a lot of Cobra's time there. And then the other characters in the meantime are going to be trying to track him down. So it'll be bouncing back and forth between these different locations across the season. And, you know, ideally, they'll meet by the end.
Still working out the logistics, huh?
I've got the beginning really well nailed down, and I've got the end really well nailed down. It's all the stuff in the middle that's still just completely up in the air.
That seems to be the hardest part all the time.
Yeah, yeah, like connecting the dots.
You have an end goal.
Yeah. I mean, with what I've got written right now, I could make one really awesome episode. But
yeah. Oh goodness! But that's the beauty of making machinima.
Yeah, but that's going back to your point earlier about making it 4-episode seasons. I'm not going to promise anything at all because I legitimately don't know how long season 3 is going to be. I'm toying with the idea of making it longer. That's very much a possibility. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, I'm a really, like, really firm believer in, you know, if you've got just barely enough ideas for 30 minutes, cut it down to 22 minutes or 25, or, you know, like it should. I really like it to I like the shows to be really dense and really really solid, really well done, and, you know, leave people wanting more. But the way things are looking, I might have way more than I could fit into 4 episodes, or they might be 4 longer episodes. You know, I might do 4 10-minute episodes instead of 5 or 6 minutes. You know, so who knows? It's a possibility.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to add about playtime, or is like a possible release date or an approximate time when the next one's coming out, or?
Well, season 3, I don't have a release date remotely nailed down yet, other than, I mean, predictively speaking, if it follows the same pattern that season 2 did, it won't be out till early next year, maybe January, you know.
January, February-ish.
Yeah, so that's what I'm aiming for. Who knows? I might be able to polish it off sooner than that. It's not likely, but it's possible. But yeah. The only other thing I wanted to notice, to mention, is that I'm going to be, if there's anybody who hasn't watched season 2 yet, I'm going to be releasing on my website, on playtimeshow.com, I'm going to be releasing season 2 in a single complete video. So rather than being broken up into 4 episodes, it's going to be a single, it's about a 25-minute show. And
it's not bad.
That's actually the way I made it. When I filmed it and edited it and cut it together, I had no plan of. I didn't have episode breaks worked out. That's something I went back in and did afterwards. So I think that it actually works better as a single continuous show than when it's broken up into episodes. I just broke it up for logistical release reasons, and
right.
You know, getting it on Waypoint is a lot easier to do if you break it into shorter episodes and everything. But I think it's actually more enjoyable as a full continuous 25-minute short movie. So I'm going to be putting that up on my site soon. Maybe I might let I'll give a couple of weeks to let the dust settle. Maybe put it up in a week or two. So.
Right.
Keep your eyes open for that. That's a great way to watch it if you haven't seen it yet, or to rewatch it. So.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I guess on the topic of Waypoint, we'll start a transition there.
Sure.
How did you actually manage to get playtime on Waypoint? Was it something that 343 approached you with, or?
No, I approached them. I approached them back with the back when I did the first season. But when I did the first season, it was a combination of I didn't have myself organized as much. The Waypoint team was also jam-packed scheduling-wise, because that was right around E3. That mm-hmm. was right when all this news about Halo Anniversary and Halo 4 was rolling out. So the idea of finding four open slots in their schedule was not going to happen. So, but what I did do was that I did the making of Playtime video, and they featured that. And then when season two came along, I was in touch with BS Angel right from the start, saying, "So I'm making season two. You know, do you mind if I submit the whole thing to you when it's ready?" And BS Angel is fantastic to work with. She was like, "Oh, I totally want to see it." You know, she was very enthusiastic about it from the get-go. So, and I think it helped that the first season got a pretty decent response, too. So they had an idea of what to expect.
Right. This is actually kind of different than what season one was.
It is. It was definitely different. But I think from their point of view, they knew that I wasn't using any harsh language.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that there was no obscene content or anything like that. Like, they had an idea for the ballpark that I was going for.
Right.
So and so from there, it was just an issue of I spent the 2 or 3 months, whatever it took for me to make the show, and then I submitted it to them. I sent them all the files, and it's a long process from there, because when you get videos featured on Waypoint, they have to go through several levels of approval.
Right.
The BS Angel and the creative staff, they have to like it. They have to want to feature it. Then it goes through, like, there's a legal approval process and all that. Playtime is actually fairly unique in terms of, I don't quote me on this, but I think it's the only show that's been featured on Waypoint that doesn't that features original music, and huh. I had to go through, like, everything else is Halo Microsoft licensed music, right?
Right.
And so I had to prepare documentation for them to make sure that everything was cool from a legal perspective, so that their legal team doesn't get nervous.
Yeah.
And then it's a scheduling thing, right? So I think from the date that I submitted the videos to the day that season two first aired on Waypoint, it was about 6 weeks. So it's a long time, and it's it was exciting for me, but it's also it's nerve-wracking, because you're sitting there on this finished product. Like, I've just
right.
spent all this time working on this show.
It's like, you want to get out there.
Exactly. And it's really tough for me to stay quiet about it and not just put it out there. But I knew it would be worth it in the long run to get it featured on Waypoint.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's a nice series for Waypoint too.
I think so. I think it fits them. And
yeah.
The funny, the one thing I was not expecting at all is it's actually, it's taken off with kids a lot more than I thought it would. Like big time. Like, I get lots and lots and lots of messages on my site and over Xbox Live and emails, either from kids or from parents who watch it with their kids and are just writing to, say how much their kids love it and everything like that. So that's something that I'm kind of happy about and kind of excited about. It's an unexpected audience. Yeah, I just wasn't planning on that at all. But I mean, it makes sense when you look at it. It totally is a kids, or at least, older children show, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm just really immature, so I thought people my age would like it too.
Well, it's a good series.
Well, thanks.
One of the other things you do for Waypoint is you actually recently started the modcast, the Waypoint modcast.
Yes, yes.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that was a fun, just sort of a fun occurrence that it just took all these different things all sort of happening at the right time in the right way. I've wanted to do a podcast since I started Cruel Legacy Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just never had the right situation or the right, you know, the right foundation for it. And then I've been very active in the Waypoint community for about a year. And when I first joined the community leadership program there back in May or June, yeah, it was around April or May, something like that. I sort of got in much closer contact with all the other community leaders there at Waypoint, because we do a lot of work behind the scenes. There's constant email threads going on back and forth about community play dates that we're organizing or forum activities, or, you know, this is going back before, right. before we had moderator status, but we were still trying to act as, you know, very, very active participants and role models and take, like, caretakers of the forum in a way. So we all started to just develop relationships with each other because of all this communication constantly going back and forth. And so it might have been Grimm who sort of casually mentioned, hey, we should do a podcast.
Oh, yeah, there's that whole Twitter thing.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, a few of us had joked about it before, but even before that. And then more recently with us becoming full-blown moderators at Waypoint, it gave us, I think, that final little reason to give us a way to touch base and touch base with the community and introduce ourselves to the community in a personal way. It's very easy for forum moderators to get isolated by the community as this group of authoritative figures who do nothing but ban people. And it was really important to us that not be the case with us.
Right.
We're all people who just enjoy participating in the forums as much as anyone else does. We're all really intense, passionate Halo fans. So it was we're a good group of people to gather together and talk about Halo. And it was also a way for the community in general to get to know us outside of just our moderator roles, you know, just to get to know us as active members of the community as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it definitely sounds like you have a start of something that's going to work out pretty well for you guys. So, I mean, more power to you.
Well, thanks. I'm happy with it. We've done two episodes so far, and I'm happy with how they've gone.
Yeah.
They're never perfect, of course. There's definitely stuff we need to work on, but we're getting lots of feedback from the community, and people are joining in with the discussions. And I mean, it's doing so far. It's doing what we hoped it would do, and we have a blast doing it. So, I hope it'll continue to grow there too.
So is there any thing in particular you would like to tell the community at large or dispel some myths about the mods for Halo Waypoint? Because I know there's definitely a few of them that's going on in the Waypoint forums.
Yeah, there's I think I want to stress to people that I think the sort of misconceptions that I see the people aiming at us or accusing us of, I think those are misconceptions that you could see leveled at any moderator on any forum. You know, the one that really gave me a kick is that we get in trouble with the administrators at 343 if we don't hit our ban quota. I thought that was fantastic. The idea that we have a minimum number of people that we're supposed to ban every week, and if we don't each individually meet it, because that's the only possible reason we could be going around banning people, right? I think the other thing I would say is that a lot of people assume that moderators go power hungry and for some reason enjoy these disciplinary acts of editing posts or giving people warnings or banning them. And this is the only time I've been part of a group of moderators. So, but I can speak to our group in particular at Waypoint. That couldn't be farther from the truth. We are so careful about not going overboard.
Yeah.
Because we are new at this. All of us all of us community leaders who have just recently been you know, upgraded to moderators. I mean, there's obviously administrative staff and other moderators who have been doing it for a long time at Waypoint. But for us community leaders, it's a new role for us. So we're very not hesitant, but careful. I don't think there's been a single ban handed out by any of us that wasn't discussed as a group. We go over every decision very thoroughly. The other thing I would stress, though, is that it's really, really simple. It's easy to participate in the forums in a manner that you'd never even have to worry about that sort of thing. We enjoy the Waypoint forums because ever since they started, they've been sort of like this. It's almost like an internet oasis, right? Where people gathered there and they were just decent human beings to each other. That's what drew me to the Waypoint forums in the first place. I mean, yeah, it's Halo and I love to talk about Halo, but there are lots of Halo forums. And the reason I clicked with Waypoint is because people knew how to treat each other with common decency. Like, people talk to each other the way they would talk if they were sitting face to face. You know, there was none of this, it's the internet, so I can get away with saying whatever, you know, bullshit I want. That just didn't happen there. You'd get the odd person who would come in and try to stir up trouble, but the entire community would just rally them out of there so fast that was very attractive to me. And so that's something we're very protective of. And it's something that we want to maintain. And it's we're going through growing pains right now because the Waypoint community has exploded in the past couple of months. You know, the number of registered users there is skyrocketing. And you're getting a lot of people coming over from lots of different forums, but in particular the BungieNet forums. And the BungieNet forums are great too. I'm not going to knock them in any way, but they were a lot more relaxed about their moderation in terms of they had every forum has a set of specific rules that you need to follow, right. And they had a different set of rules, and they didn't they didn't really care about people trash talking each other so much. We're more on top of that, right? We don't want people coming in and throwing around insults, and so we just say, you know, look, just be a decent person when you talk to people, and you don't ever have to worry about the moderators coming down on you. If you suddenly burst out insulting someone for no reason or flaming people, yeah, we're going to take action there, but it's actually pretty simple, you know, if you really think about it. We just want people to be able to talk, and you don't have to agree. We have debates and arguments all the time, but, you know, yeah, learn how to do that without being insulting and trash talking, and and the best part about it is that leads to actual genuine discussion, that leads to actual debates and actual situations where you get to learn a lot more from these sorts of discussions rather than just turning into insult wars. So that's my two cents on it.
Okay. I mean, I coming from the standpoint of moderating for, I guess, 3 years now for Podtacular. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, like you said, it's not about abusing power.
No.
And for those that are moderators, they usually get chosen because of their ability to accurately judge and take appropriate action on threads that need attention.
Yeah.
So, and that's the reason why you guys have been chosen, is that you're doing a good job, you're supporting the community, and you were chosen. You didn't ask them for it. You were chosen to be mods.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the things. One of the other things I think a lot of people don't understand is that if you're asking to be a moderator, you're not material to be the moderator.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
A moderator earns their position. They don't ask and receive it. They earn it.
Yep.
So, but is there any other information on Waypoint that you want to touch base on?
Well, I mean, it's definitely worth mentioning that the Waypoint forums just went through a full software upgrade. So they've expanded. There's a much wider range of threads now. There's more discussion going on there now than ever before. And so it's a great time to hop in if you want to just meet people. And I've met more people who have turned into actual, you know, I say in quotes, internet friends, as in people I've never met in real life, but I actually communicate with them online in a series of ways, whether it's Twitter or playing games with them online or talking on the forums. I've actually developed relationships with these people, mm-hmm. rather than it just being a bunch of individual people standing on their own soapboxes. Right. So yeah. I just, you know, just give a general invitation for everybody to check it out if they haven't already, and come introduce yourself. And, you know, we're generally a very friendly group. And the one last little suck up thing I'd have to say is I just can't say enough about the staff and the administrators at 343, because they have put an absolute prime importance on developing the community from the very beginning. That's the one thing that I think I cannot, I can't think of another group, another
developer.
Yeah. Thank you. who has put the focus on developing community in such a short short span of time, the way they have. I mean, they've been so proactive about bringing the community together, you know, and I mean, I met you know, BS Angel and a lot of the other people on the team there, because, you know, they tracked me down and contacted me and said, hey, we'd like to feature this, and, you know, and so they're really in touch with their community, and I think that's a really good thing. So
that's good. I mean, yeah, one of the things that I've been focused on for ever since their beginning is community, which is nice. I mean, yeah. That's what Halo Fest is all about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're definitely on the ball when it comes to community. I find it funny that for your last episode of Playtime, one of the related stuff things is inside the Halo Reach beta.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. I don't know how, but it is.
Oh, geez. I don't know either. It must be some tags working some magic there.
Something.
Yeah.
There's something up there. Okay, well, one more thing I want to do before we wrap this up is I'm trying to start doing something every week, and that's talking about the Waypoint Bulletin. So for this week's bulletin, I guess BS Angel gave a somewhat summary of her trip to London.
Yeah.
is that what I'm getting here?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
What event was in London over the past couple weeks?
You know, I don't actually know, other than I know there was some traveling by lots of people, several people at 343. I think it was press event related. As far as I know, it's stuff that's mostly not being talked about yet.
Right, because the latest thing I remember was New York Comic Con, and that was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, something like
that.
2 weeks
ago? Yeah. So it's like, what was in London? So I couldn't figure that out. I was wondering if you knew.
Well, I know. David Ellis, he was overseas as well, and I think he went to Paris as well and a few other places. So, and I'm not sure how much of it was work related, how much of it was, you know, maybe he was. I thought he was just on a vacation, but just from following on Twitter, I picked up a few hints that some of it might have been, at least some of it was work related. So, I think there's some press event stuff going on. Personally, that would be my guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, next down the list was the behind-the-scenes anniversary music and anniversary terminals. So, I guess the first one was music, so let's talk about that one.
Sure.
In terms of the music, I mean, it sounds pretty much the same as the music was in Halo 1, of course, with the little differences.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular that you like about the new music over the old music that you could tell from this movie?
Well,
or this video?
I like that we're just going to get to hear more natural instrumentation. I mean, there's a lot of the right. Halo soundtrack is absolutely brilliant, no doubt about it. a lot of it was recorded with synthesized versions of strings and synthesized, you know, like it was Marty O'Donnell and what's his partner's name? Salvatore. Yeah, it's all MIDI and synth playing, and there's some orchestral in there as well, but a lot of it is faux orchestral, right? And I mean, that's not necessarily worse than a real orchestra, but I appreciate that. You know, there is a certain just natural texture that you get from just hearing just these real instruments. What I think is going to be interesting is I think it's going to be really hard for people to listen to the re-recorded, remastered music, even though it's the same music. It's the same pieces of music being performed because it's not going to sound identical to how they remember it. Is that going to be better for some people or worse for other people? Or like, I think some people will listen to it and go,
yeah,
oh, this is a fantastic version of this piece of music. And other people will listen to it and go, that's not how it's supposed to sound. You know, it's going to be interesting to see where the balance falls. I personally love it. I think it's great. So,
yeah, I mean, it'll definitely be nice to kind of hear the differences that are going to be between it. And of course, 343 is adding their own little extra audio bits to the soundtrack. So we are going to hear some slight changes to the original written music pieces, which, I mean, we'll kind of establish the 343 touch, I think.
I think so.
And maybe we'll get a glimpse on the kind of mood we'll see with the Halo 4 music. So we'll have to see what happens.
That's going to be, I think that's an area that people, there's a few people who are talking about it a lot, but it's going more or less undiscussed by a lot of the greater community, which is how unbelievably difficult it's going to be to live up to what Marty O'Donnell and you know, that the music in the Halo franchise has been brilliant. Now, I will say the music in the Halo 4 trailer blew me away. I thought it was fantastic. I thought, okay, if this is a concept idea, in the E3 trailer, the Halo 4 E3 trailer, I thought the music in that was just perfect. So if that's an idea of the kind of caliber of music we can expect, I'm not worried. You know, but I think those are, I think the single biggest shoes to fill, if you can call it that, because on the one hand, the music is, it's a relatively small portion of your development team. It's, you know, a couple people for the most part.
Right.
But when you really look back on how much that affects your experience when you're playing the game, it is huge. It plays a huge, huge role. So that's, you know, a lot of pressure on those couple of people, right? If they don't nail it.
There's also the issue of you don't want to necessarily copy Marty because there's potential to really kind of screw that up because Marty's style is unique. I mean, you can attribute the success of the Halo soundtrack to it being his style of music.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they mix the current Halo sound theme with their own, I guess, flavor.
Well, that's a really good point. And I think that the funny thing that I would point to is if you look at the ODST soundtrack, because
that's a beautiful soundtrack.
That's my favorite soundtrack.
Yeah. Mine too.
Any movie, any game. It's just incredible. And the thing, the reason I bring that up is because, so yes, it's still Marty O'Donnell, but when you look at the challenges he was facing there, where he's like, I want to do a new soundtrack, but I want it to sound like Halo, but I don't want it to be based off of, like, it's got to be different, completely different in atmosphere and emotion than Halo 1, 2, and 3. Right. And so when you really look at the soundtrack in that game and you look at, so there's certain commonalities. There's a certain element of how he mixes these, you know, violin melodies with heavy drums underneath. And even though they're playing very different pieces of music, there's something about the mixture of the rhythm, what right. that does when you're the way that, because that's what gets your blood flowing when you're in these yeah. intense firefights. And those drums, those Halo theme song drums, are huge. So you don't have to copy that, but you got to do something that fills that gap, that fills that same role, right?
Yeah, you got to keep the atmosphere of Halo while developing new music for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the big challenge I think they face.
Really. I mean, I think the way I might rephrase that is they have to match the atmosphere of the game they're making. And we don't know how much Halo 4 is going to be like Halo 3 or how true. Different it's going to be. I think it's a safe bet that they're not going to be worlds apart. You know, I think they're going to be paying really close attention on to making it feel like Halo, because especially with this being their first Halo game on their own, they could get really slammed if this comes out and it's too yeah. different from what people are expecting. But I think, you know, it's a different team. It's a different development team and a different creative team. These are all Halo fans. They all know what Halo is, but I think they're going to have their own version of it too. And right. So I think as long as the music suits the game they're making, right, so, then they're going to.
So what do you think of the difference between the soundtracks and then the music that we heard in the art trailer? Because, I mean, that to me was really different.
It was. I'm trying to remember it, though. I'm a little foggy on it.
Can you look it up on YouTube real quick or something?
You're talking about the
concept art trailer for the campaign in Halo 4.
Right, right. I remember it. It was different. I liked it. You know, I liked all the music that we've heard from them so far. It's hard to really judge it outside of gameplay. I mean, there are certain pieces of music on the original Halo soundtracks that if you hear it on its own, you go, well, that sounds kind of weird compared to the rest of the soundtrack. But maybe it just really really fits that level. Like there's there's a piece of music in Halo 2 that plays on the Delta Halo level. That's these really sort of bouncy, plucky violins, and you hear it on its own, and it goes, that sounds nothing like the you know mm-hmm. Halo music that we think of. But you play the level, and it's perfect. It just fits. So it is hard to judge it outside of context. So,
all right. The next video was the anniversary terminals, and it doesn't seem like there's too much information in here other than what we already know that they're taking a new direction with the terminals.
Yeah, which you know, I'm generally speaking a big fan. Like I'm a big fan of what we've seen so far. I really like when they go into these sort of expanded glimpses into the deeper universe.
Mm-hmm.
We're
going to learn a lot more about Guilty Spark too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who is I think Guilty Spark and the role that he plays in the entire saga is very interesting, and I think it's a good choice to explore that further, because there's a lot we don't know about him yet.
Right.
I think he's a very interesting character, because it's less about good or bad and more about that he feels he's got this specific role that he needs to fill. And sometimes that role is in sync with the player, and sometimes it's at odds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see more of him.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good thing to see more of his backstory.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so the last thing we have in the update was lots of changes to matchmaking.
Yes, yes.
First of all, for all you MLG people out there, version 6 is finally out after, I want to say, a good 6 months of being on version 4.
Is that how long it's been?
At least. I mean, yeah. I have people I play with that play MLG religiously, and they've been griping at the fact that the versions on the matchmaking was V4. So.
Yeah.
They finally updated those to V6, so these are the current versions. I'm not sure if all the current maps are there. I know they added some stuff for the last event, but at least you have the right game types now and probably updated maps.
Yeah, I would assume that if they're updating the game types, they'd update the maps to go along with it. I mean, that all makes sense. So
yeah, Griffball playlist has been updated. There's two maps that are being added into the rotation from, I guess, some Summer League champions. Like maps they play on, according to the description here.
Right. Yeah.
So, and then Cliffhanger removed. I'm guessing that's kind of a joke entry. I'm not exactly sure. Do you have the bulletin up?
I'm just opening it up now. I thought it was serious.
Well, I'm like, where is this applying? I can't figure it out.
Doesn't it just mean they're just taking Cliffhanger out of the map rotation completely?
Is there a map called Cliffhanger?
Unless I'm totally making it up, I believe there was. It was a Forge made map that got added into matchmaking. I'm gonna totally screw this up now, and someone please correct me on this. But I believe it was a Forge made map that was done by Mr. Lars Bakken at Bungie shortly after Reach launched. The idea being to you know, let's get some complete Forge made maps into the matchmaking rotation just to sort of, right, you know, encourage people, show them, hey, look, this is the kind of thing you can do.
Was this the accompaniment to Adam? Maybe.
I believe so. Oh. And it was unfortunately one of the most unanimously despised.
I don't know if I ever played maps. That map then.
I didn't mind it so much, but there was a very, very large vocal chunk of the community that just despised it. So I'm not surprised that it's
okay,
being shut down for now. So
okay. Yeah, I don't think I ever played that one. I wonder what it looked like now.
there's some footage of it in, oh geez, I'm trying to remember, one of my episodes of Fails of Reach. I want to say Fails of Reach number 4. There's a few glimpses of it.
Alright. Waiting's adjusted for firefights, and now there's more of a chance you'll get Gruntpocalypse.
Yeah, the firefight ones honestly baffle me, because now you might be getting to it in a second, but they've removed
Firefight Limited, yep.
Yeah, which I mean, I understand that they're doing it because the player count is so low. It makes sense on that, and I'm saying it baffles me that the player count is that low, because Firefight Limited is incredible. It is such an amazingly fun playlist. I know everybody's got their own tastes and their own things they're into, so I don't want to, you know, knock anybody else's favorite playlist, but I find the other versions of Firefight so repetitive and so boring. It's all rockets or all fuel rod cannons, and it's just trigger spam. There's no worry of dying. There's no worry of survival. But Firefight Limited, I mean, that's
a classic Firefight.
Exactly. And ODST Firefight was so good. And this
Other than the networking issues.
When you got a game.
Let's be real here.
Yeah, when you got in a match that worked, it was brilliant. It was some of the best Halo I've ever played. So it's really sad to me that didn't click and take off more, because that's the only Firefight playlist I would go into on a regular basis at all. So yeah, it makes me sad to see that go away.
Zero Bloom Slayer game types in the beta matchmaking playlist is going to appear more often.
Yes.
So for all you Zero Bloom versus 85% Bloom level lovers, you will see more of that.
Yeah, now this is, I have a theory on this based on absolutely nothing other than my own conjecture. I think Zero Bloom is just as controversial as Bloom was in the first place. meaning I think you're going to get people arguing very ferociously on both sides.
Right.
I spent a lot of time in the title update playlist for the first week. And overall, I really like all the changes in the title update. I think they've done a good job of tweaking armor lock. I think, you know, the pistol damage boost is good. Like, I like it. It's good.
Yeah.
I despise Zero Bloom with a passion.
Yeah, I do too. Because like, you've just gotten used to the bloom.
It's just and even more than that, even more than whether you're used to it or not, the entire game, the entire weapon selection is balanced around that.
Yeah.
And so if you take Bloom out of the equation, all of a sudden you've got these couple of weapons that are just it's so dominant.
Like
it's
the pistol.
Yeah. It's
even without the 3-shot kill, the pistol is still with Zero Bloom.
Yeah. It's pretty
deadly.
You
shouldn't be able to take out someone with a pistol faster than a DMR.
No, you shouldn't. And so to me, it's not just that it's a different game. To my own personal opinion here, I think it's a bad game. It's a flat out unbalanced, completely one dimensional. Every single match of Zero Bloom you ever play is just guys hiding behind cover, having these standoff DMR duels. It is so boring. Yeah. It's not Halo. Halo to me is about having options at your disposal and being able to approach combat in different ways from in different scenarios. In my mind, the best Halo players are always the players who could adapt to whatever situation they were in, and have the skills with the different combinations of weapons, the different ranges of combat. And with Zero Bloom, all that goes out the window completely because you never get close enough to another enemy to do anything other than spam the DMR at them. Like that's all the game turns into. So now here's where my theory comes in. I stopped playing the title update playlist because the chances of running into Zero Bloom games made it not worth participating in the playlist to me. Like I hate it so much that I went back to just playing the general playlist because you know, I never had a problem with the standard Bloom settings anyway, so like I was just playing the other playlist and having fun.
Yeah.
The people
I mean, all the other updates in the title update, like the bleed through and the armor lock stuff, that I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too. I liked it all. I think
the armor lock still needs to be nerfed more.
And I think further down your list there, I think you'll see that they have done that a little bit.
Yeah.
They haven't detailed exactly how, but they are tweaking it a little further.
Yeah, the armor lock got adjusted.
But what I think happened is I think the only people who stayed in the title update beta playlist are the people who like Zero Bloom. So now the playlist is full of Zero Bloom lovers. So all of a sudden it's looking in the matchmaking statistics like, oh, Zero Bloom is getting voted for all the time. We should put more of it, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think that's representative of the community. I think that's representative of the people who didn't get chased out of that playlist because they couldn't stand the Zero Bloom settings so much. So, you know, and that's fine. I mean, this is all temporary. My hope is that when the title update expands out from a single playlist and when it goes matchmaking wide, I think they should give Zero Bloom its own playlist. Like for the people who like it, let them go into a playlist where they're going to get it and they're going to play by those rules and they know what they're getting and they can enjoy it. And for everybody else, let us stay the hell away from it. Like I don't want to sound melodramatic, but I don't ever want a chance of running into that game type in matchmaking because I despise it. That would seriously affect my desire to play Halo multiplayer if that ends up being a heavily weighted game type option in regular matchmaking. So, personally speaking, I really hope that doesn't happen.
Right. Let's see. That's pretty much it in terms of the matchmaking front.
I think so, other than a really sick screenshot further down there.
Oh, yeah, the pumpkin. Yeah. It's going to be Halloween here in a few days. They've got some carving stencils up on the bulletin, too, if you're into the whole pumpkin carving thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, check out the bulletin. It's full of some pretty good stuff. And I think that pretty much wraps up this show.
Awesome.
Thank you again, Cruel Legacy, for coming on and talking to us about Playdate.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me, man. I was really really glad to be here.
So. Yeah. And how can people get a hold of you?
Well, they can my gamer tag, my Waypoint forum ID, my Twitter handle, it's all Cruel Legacy. So hit me up over any of those. My email is cruellegacy@hotmail.com. Both of my websites, cruellegacyproductions.com and playtimeshow.com. They both have full comment systems on every single page, every single post. So I read those. And I respond to as many of them as I can. So people, you know, ask me a lot of questions that way. Because that's a good way to ask me a question about something specific. You know, if you just watch an episode, you can comment right under it and ask me a question, and I'll get back to you. So, all of the above.
Very nice. Well, thank you again, Mr. Cool Legacy, for coming on. Next week we will be talking about the data drops. The infamous data drops that we've been littered with for the past 2 months, and kind of see what has been contained in there. There's some mention of some secret mission, red flag. So for all you juicy intel people out there, definitely tune in to next week's show. We'll most definitely have Grim on there since he likes
I was going to say, yeah, you better have Grim on for that one.
Grim's going to be on there. We'll try to get a few other people as well. And if you have anything to say about the data drops or your impressions, be sure to send us a submission using the green button on the homepage, or you can send them directly to submissions@podtacular.com. Also, you can leave us a voicemail at our mailbox at 206-888-HALO. And while you're there, go ahead and leave your tips, tricks for matchmaking, any customs that you've made, maybe some funny tales that you've had while playing Halo. Go ahead and drop us a line in our email or leave us a voicemail. So without further ado, thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week. Later.
Later.